All right. Well, this is the part of the workshop that we write together on. So any questions that you may have about relationships, healing relationships that have been wounded, or relationship in any disrepair, or understanding about any details about what we said or about any applications in relationships, you're certainly welcome to ask a question now. So raise your hand and Daniel will bring you the microphone. No.
I did not have a very good relationship with my dad, and he died 8 years ago, well, in 2000. And I have not dreamed about him at all since he died, but since I've known I was coming to this relationship workshop, I've dreamed about him. He came to me in a dream. So I would like to know if there's anything I need to know about that.
All right. Well, he came to you in a dream after you'd already set your intention to come to this workshop, yes?
Yes.
All right. So his coming to you in a dream is a message to you that it's time for you to complete the healing with him. There's a time of closure that has come. And it may not be with him per se. You might have already done processes and healings and so forth and so on. But there's some kind of opportunity to come to a deeper and greater sense of peace and to connect into a deeper sense of love, because part of his message is that he loves you and he still loves you. That maybe when he was alive, he didn't know how to express it. He didn't know how to be with that because he was so focused perhaps on his own issues, on his own shame and how to cover that and maintain his status as authority or status as a man. And so he may not have had a clue as to what filters or perceptions that you were looking through when you saw him. And so he may not have had a clue how he came across, what the impact of his behaviors on the ways of his being were. He also didn't have access to various resources of knowledge and personal growth and development concepts that could have given him a bit more orientation and a bit more happiness while he was alive. So he comes to you to say, you have more options than I, the opportunity for you to experience love, to transcend whatever limitations are present in this relationship. Here is an opportunity to do that. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Anyone else?
I have another question.
Good.
I've lost hearing in my right ear almost totally, and I would like to know if that loss is relationship related.
And how long has it been since you've had that?
I can't tell you exactly. Let's just say 10 years.
Give or take a year or two, either way, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, very interesting that you had brought up your father before, because we sense it has something to do with him. And there are two factors that come into play here, either and or both. And one is, of course, when you have any issue about hearing, it has to do with an issue about being heard or what you're hearing. And so the issue about being heard, we sense that perhaps he was unable to really get where you were coming from. Do you sense that he had that difficulty? Did you clarify where you were coming from every time you spoke with him? Did you have to?
He didn't allow it. He was right, and everyone else was wrong. I didn't have the opportunity. I wasn't allowed to clarify.
To clarify or express.
And he was abusive.
Mm-hmm. And abusive, he was an angry person?
Very angry person.
All right, and he would take it out on you. So his words to you were laced with anger, right?
Hostility.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When I was a young child, he took his anger out on my mother and my older brother. My older brother was 10 years older. And he took his anger out on them. And then when my older brother went to college and my mother died, when I was 12, he took the anger out on me. But I had been his precious darling up until then.
Oh, that must have been quite a devastation for you.
It was.
To go through that switch. Because in a sense he was able to contain it up to that point.
Yes.
All right. So that was what we would call a wounding for you.
I'm sorry?
It was a wounding.
Wounding, yes.
For
yes.
you. That was very painful wounding, and it undermined your sense of value, your sense of worth at the time, and made it more difficult for you, in a sense, to trust in relationships.
Yes.
Because then that pattern may repeat, you know, they come in, the honeymoon period might be glorious, and then as soon as reality settles in, then it could be all of a sudden you've stuck with a really nasty-tempered guy.
Yes, and we all tried to please him so he wouldn't go into a rage. And then so then I carried that over into my two marriages and my relationships with my children for years.
So you created, because of that, but by your observation and also then by your experience, after that age of 12, that you brought codependency into your relationship patterns.
Very much so.
And one of the things that comes with that is that fear of hostility, that fear of just ticking him off and creating all sorts of trauma, traumatic energy. And for you, you were sensitive to energies. And so when he would get hostile, when he would have rages, when things would just kind of get out of control and you would feel that fear coming on you, it would be very devastating to your energy body. Are you aware that it just fragmented you?
Maybe to some extent. I'm not sure that I understand that fully.
All right. Well, that when it happened, you had a tendency not to feel cohesive and congruent and strong in yourself. You would lose that connection to yourself, and all of a sudden you'd get strung out here distracted over here or pieced out over there, just some, in a sense, not being able to hold yourself together real well. And what you did that deliberately so that you would not have to deal with the intensity of your own reaction. You would not have to deal with the intensity of the pain. You fragmented it out. You broke it into little pieces. And then later on, your plan was that you'd pull yourself back together and piece yourself back together. You know, if you have a tremendous fear, or you have a tremendous anger, and the subject of it is really goes away, or it's not really real. It's just something that you entertain. After a night of sleep, it's much less in the morning. Have you ever noticed?
Yes.
You know, that emotion, the intensity of its impact sinks down into your subconscious at night when you sleep, if you don't process it, if you don't release it. And then in your deep, deep sleep, it can sink down into your unconscious mind. So by the time you wake up in the morning, you have maybe about 10-20% of it, if that. So all of a sudden, just sleeping on it means that you'll come to a better perspective. What that means is, though, is that that's a strategy of going, in a sense, unconscious, not really dealing with the intensity of it, but just kind of waiting it out, just kind of pushing it away. And as a strategy, it is rather successful if you don't have other strategies, you don't know how to release it at the moment. So one of the things that we sense is happening here with your hearing is that it just got to a place where it's kind of the straw, you know, on the camel's back. It just kind of brought it to a point where it was just an overload, an overwhelm energetically to you. Now, it meant that you decided, though, you were already becoming stronger, you were becoming more mature, right, at that time?
Yes.
You're building yourself, you were standing up for yourself more, and so on. So you are more cohesive. So therefore, you were getting, when he would hand the brunt of that energy to you, you would get it more intensely, actually, at that time. You were actually more aware of it with more intensity. And you had to learn how to deal with it. One of the ways that you dealt with it is just to turn a deaf ear to him.
No, he was not in my life when I lost my hearing.
All right, but wasn't there another man in your life at the time?
Well, I don't.
Who was in your life at that time that in a sense, took on the role of your father? Who was there that was either judged you or was creating separation for you? Anyone?
Well, I'm trying to remember if I was still dating the person I dated in that, during that period, and I don't really think I was. My younger brother was in my life when I lost the hearing.
Mm-hmm. And what is your relationship like with him? That's cordial, yes?
I'm sorry?
Is your relationship with your younger brother cordial?
It was very cordial for many, many years, and then he went into alcoholism, and he could be abusive too.
Was
verbally
he able,
abusive.
All right. Was he able to be verbally abusive at that time?
I don't remember him being verbally abusive at that time.
It's been later since then?
Yes. Well, he had been before on one occasion, and I just separated myself from him. And I hadn't spoken to him or been around him in many years. And then when I divorced, he came back in, my younger brother came back into my life. And so then he was actually, he was wanting to be a partner. We were partners in a project that I had started, and he wanted to be partners in that, and we were.
And that worked out okay?
It worked out. It didn't end too great, but it didn't. We weren't having difficulties at that time. And then since then, he's been very abusive, and I think he now knows that. I mean, our relationship is okay now. He knows I'm not available for that stuff.
Good, good. All right.
That's as succinct as I can be and give.
That's very good, though. Thank you. But the thing is that, yes, your loss of hearing is related. If you notice, it's your right ear, is it?
Yes.
All right. That's masculine. That's the masculine. Because it seems that on the masculine, or with men, that's where you would get the pain. That's where you would get the rejection, or that's where you would get the hostility. That's where you would get the anger. That's where you... And this, not only, you know, was it happening with your father and then a little bit later maybe with your younger brother or whatever, but it also is something that you had as an ongoing strategy in your life. And it might have even applied to other men, even men casually, like a man you were dating or a men you were interacted with. But it would put a load on that right ear, because what you were hearing was something that was not okay. It was painful. And so, in a way, it was a way for you to just shut that out. Now, what that means, though, is that even though you cut out that avenue from men in particular, from the masculine in particular, when you heal the masculine, there is a possibility for some of that to come back.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And it's some of it will also have to do, and you know we talked about the relationship with oneself, it also has to do with you coming to peace with your own masculine side. Because every person has a masculine and a feminine side. Your first obligation by having chosen to be a woman is to your feminine. But the way that you really enable yourself not only to survive but to thrive is to also build a strength of your masculine. And between the two of them, you can stay centered, stay grounded in yourself, and stand up for yourself. But there was fear in your system. Right as this loss of hearing occurred, there was a fear and a disorientation. You were going through some kind of personal change. All right, so
okay.
That's something that you may want to look at. Not that it's of major import, but to recognize that every time you go through personal changes, that it's going to probably affect your body a little bit or some or a lot sometimes. And to keep kind of notice on it. Because if you've cut down your hearing over here and that issue isn't totally healed, then some other part of your body will start to get the overload, since that the ear is no longer being able to compensate for all that which you had to suffer from your father and so on. You understand?
I do, yes.
Yeah, you just have to switch whatever that pattern is to some other part of your body. So you need to stay aware, particularly as you go through self-induced, you know, growth changes, as you want to become more on your journey to own more of your divinity. Every step of the way, there is also the challenge, okay, how do I deal with this issue with the masculine? And do I let my own inner masculine now nurture me and protect me and be strong and stand up for me? And as you really allow that to integrate into you and be okay, then your relationship with men in general can also heal. What we might suggest is that either a husband who probably played out that same role as your father, or maybe your father yourself, you might want to do some healing work on in this workshop. Because we're going to do a healing meditation after this question period. You see?
Yes, I see. Thank you.
All right. You're very welcome. All right. Anyone else have a question?
My question is about relationship with adult children.
Adult children, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that my adult children still call me for their nurturing, and I imagine that years ago that I needed them to do that, but in the last 15, 20 years I haven't. But they don't seem to get the, I don't know how to get across to them that they're to nurture themselves, and I'm not their mommy anymore.
Right. Well, sometimes once people give power away to someone else in a kind of an agreement that's kind of more psychic or subconscious than it is obviously conscious, and they seem to find that agreement working, they're not going to stop doing it. So the thing is that they still look to you for nurturance, and to a certain extent, even though you are a little bit more detached than you have been or whatever, you don't feel like being mean or nasty to them. So in a sense, you give them attention and they take it as nurturance and they think, oh, this works. So they have given certain power to you to be the nurturer. And as long as you nurture it, or as long as you give them attention and are nice and warm, they think it's going to work. Now, we're not suggesting that you get mean. You know, we're not suggesting that you reject them or say, don't call me. Of course not. But we would suggest that you start changing the relationship with them. And one of the ways you can do that is because being that they're adults and they've been adults for how many years, 20 years or so, what you may want to do with them is to say, you know, I've decided to change my name, or I've decided to have a nickname, and I would like you to call me by my nickname. That may be very, you know, you may not really want to do this technique, but think about what energy this technique would do. It would create a certain sense of them having to be aware of you as a, as an individual on the same level of individuality as they, and asking them to give you like a nickname means that they would be in a friendship basis with you. And that's the kind of relationship you'd really like to have, yes?
That's correct.
You know, so we sense that that might really, something like that, just feel the energy of that. How would you shift, if you didn't use that kind of technique, how would you shift the relationship into a friendship? Maybe by inviting them to do something with you as an equal adult. Not for you in any way, shape, or form be helping them about anything. Or introducing them to something that you think, oh, you might enjoy. Those are kind of positive parent aspects. Something, though, that is not socially productive, perhaps, that you invite them to, let's say, another person we know invited her daughter to go to a spa with her and get a massage and her nails and hair and stuff. Not that we said that would be the greatest working strategy for you, but think of something that is, you know, not useful and nurturing and supportive as an event, perhaps, that the two of you could share together just once maybe or twice and just relate to each other as friends. And when they seek out your maternal advice, you could say, well, I suggest you talk to some good counselor about that. Or I suggest that you might want to call so-and-so. Or, you know, you want me to look up for you somebody to talk to about that. Because I'm off duty now. Mom's off duty. Mom's retired. Kind of keep just laughingly, just jokingly, just easily deflect it, defer it, move that seeking, mommy seeking energy somewhere else. You've told them already to be their own nurturers, to be their own attention givers. And they're not going to listen to you as long as you still give them advice or as long as they can still rely on your attention in the same way it used to be. But you change the way you are attentive with them and just become afraid and sometimes just sit there and not say anything, just as you might with some an equal friend of yours that just enjoy the view, you know, sit there and enjoy the view. Do things like that that would indicate that you are more on an equal basis. And there's going to be a part of you that is going to be slightly uncomfortable about being on an equal basis. And so you need to just take note of that part of you and just let it go. All right?
Okay, thank you.
Because it may be just related to a little bit of self-image. That's just a habit that you want to appear a certain way. And, oh, well, let me let go of that. Because you don't hold that with a dear friend, for example. You can just kind of hang out and be yourself and make some joke and not have to go into any kind of nurturing or sincere, helpful topics, you see. All right?
Thank you.
Now, there's one more thing we might want to add to that, too. Is that in meditation, you might want to give them a ritual of freedom. Because somewhere along the line, they think they're still bonded to you in that old mother-daughter or mother-child pattern. And undoubtedly, they've carried it over to their, you know, to their marriages or their relationships. They've probably got some parent-child dynamics going on. So What you might want to do is to do a little ceremony in meditation where you give them a gift and say, now you're free. You're free. You're no longer a child anymore. You're my friend. You're no longer my child. I'm no longer your mother. I am your friend. And kind of do it in a ritual. You see?
Yes, I do.
That can shift the energy as well. It's an old shamanic trick. Because in certain villages, the parents would do this kind of ritual with their children. And, of course, you know of it in certain cultures, for example, in the Jewish culture, that when you get to a certain age, you're officially, you know, grown up. It's a little too young in this culture to really make it effective, but it's the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of thing. It's just, it's a little further along when they really are capable of doing their adult thing. Because they are. They just, they're lazy because they get the attention they want. All right? Okay, so, anyone else?
In different readings and in just different experiences I've had in my life, my mother, who passed away when she was 59, February 9th, 1984, she doesn't ever come up, actually. I think the spoken words I've heard are, you know, the baby in the bathwater, your mother wasn't there for you for whatever reasons, which I believe I'm beginning to understand. I have good feelings about my mother, very good feelings about my mother. I look at her, I hug her up, I give her kisses, but I just don't have a sense of her being around me. And when I have astrological readings, she's not there. She just doesn't come up.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. So I feel like I've, over time, had the experience, the hope, the wantedness, the knowingness to have her be closer to me in my life, even though I feel I have an understanding and I don't have any misgivings or being upset about what she could or couldn't do when she was on this earth. I think she had a very difficult life, actually. Was a very unhappy person and was a school teacher and didn't want to have children and would voice that at on a regular basis. So
that must have felt a little strange.
Yes. So I'm just wondering where she is.
Oh, all right.
In a way, I mean, I don't hear from her or feel her presence like I do my husband.
Right. Well, we would suggest that very few people actually stay to connect with their, you know, the loved ones that they left behind. Very few people actually do that. A lot of times people want their parents, maybe their grandparents, to be their guardian angels, to be someone to look out after them. And indeed, in certain cultures, it was an accepted practice in many centuries ago, in cultures that were very isolated, tribes that lived in a particular area and didn't interbreed with lots of other tribes. And so what would happen is that in the incarnational pattern of people, that people would continue to incarnate in the same family over and over. It's like one person would leave, the next child born in their lineage, most people would assume that they would be coming in again. And yet, that's not happening so much anymore because the tribes have broken up. It's a different era. And there are so many spirit helpers around you willing to support you. And indeed, as you said, your husband is doing it. You don't really have a need for her. Your desire for her to be there speaks that there may be some piece of you that feels a little unfulfilled, that would like some extra love and has a little hole that you would like to have her fill. If that is the case, whether it is or isn't, but if that is the case, then we would suggest that to realize that that's not your adult self who is looking for this relationship. It is a part of you, an adolescent or a child part of you, that is still wanting a fulfillment with your mother that was an ideal hoped for at some other time, even though you know that the real person that she was and the role that she played was to give you some of your issue of showing you and reflecting to you, in a sense, that your nurturing of yourself was going to be up to you. Very interesting that this question follows a question in which the child is still looking to the mother to nurture her. And even though death has distanced you too physically, you're in that position yourself, looking to her. It's not her role to stay on after her physical departure. In fact, a lot of the higher beings, when they're done doing their job, after all, she and you agreed on what job she was going to do, what she was going to say, how you were going to feel, and how it was going to work into your process. You agreed on that. So she's done. She finished. She did it. She did a good job. You have your issues you've got to work on, and you can still continue to work on them to your heart's content. But she did her job. Now, what's happening with your mother is that she's one of the majority of people who go on with their lives because, frankly, there's so much more going on the other side than there is on this side in the physical. On the other side is where there's much more home. You know, that's the heaven worlds. That's where you spend your time in between lifetimes. The majority of you is there. The majority of her is there, and there's lots of interesting things for her to do. She is as she was an educator in her physical life, she is very much attuned to learning and education. And so she's not what you would call the typical nurturer role. You understand? And so because of that, what she's doing on the other side is she's going to school and having a blast. She's going and learning all sorts of exciting things. You know, the Akashic Records is open. The great libraries of the universe are open. And people go to school and specialize just like they do here and get knowledge and information. And she's an information hog. She really likes it. So she's there just having a great time. And as far as she's concerned, she may come back to physical plane. And when she does, she's going to come back with more information. And we sense she's actually is planning to have an incarnation over the next, 20 to 40 years to come in soon, not too far in the future, and really bring in some really good information onto the planet. That's much more her role. She's not a nurturer, protector. Your husband is. You understand?
Yes.
All right. So we would recommend that you perhaps do a little meditation. You call her in. Thank her so much for all that she has done for you. Forgive her if you find anything that still is outstanding, although we don't sense you have much at all. And then convey to her how you had wanted her to be a nurturing person, and you can recognize that she's really much more, if you look at it from the point of view in mythology, there is Diana, or Athena. Let's look at Athena. Athena as a goddess who was split from the head of, the king of the gods. Boom, out pops Athena, and she's an intellectual woman. Then there is a woman named Hera, who is the mother, the queen of the hearth. this is a nurturer and supporter. These are two different goddesses. They have two different energies, the earth mother and the intellectual, the knower. Your mother was the Athena. She'll never be a Hera for you. So what you want to do is just let her know that you had put this overlay of expectation on her and ask for her forgiveness. You know, for you having to continue, because in a sense, it's hard for you to continue saying, hey, knock, knock, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? When she's done with this lifetime. And while she doesn't dislike you at all, is not, and she can love you, she loves you more. She's a type of mother who, if she had stayed around and if it had worked for you, she would have loved you as a friend and had a good time sharing information with you and ideas. You see, so in a sense, it kind of was, you've been a little bit nagging at her, right? Not to feel guilty about this in the least, dear one, but just to realize that you're asking her to provide something she doesn't have. What you may want to do is to do a little meditation, and as you get her forgiveness, and you forgive yourself for that, and you embrace her, in the meditation, you feel the love and feel the connection to the ultimate degree that you could or can. And then you let her go and let her go to her university, right? Then what we would suggest you do is you call in your higher self and let your higher self, with her unconditional love, embrace you and be present for you. Because that's really the relationship that you're looking for. You understand?
Yes.
The higher self is the one who has the wisdom, who has the unconditional acceptance, who can nurture you, who can be present for you regardless of what's going on in your life. And she's there for you 24/7. And if you can strike up a good relationship with your higher self, by she can personify herself to you even though she's much greater than form. She is the you that's beyond all your lifetimes. She knows your destiny. She knows your dreams and your visions. And she's there to hold your hand. If that feels a bit overwhelming to you, then ask your higher self to provide you with a very loving angel for your support, for your nurturing. Because angels, you know, they assign an angel to you. The angel's job is just to be a love bunny. Angels just are just, all that's all they know how to do. Angels are created to love. Now, there are certain what are considered hierarchies of angels. Not, doesn't really work quite that way, but there are certain angels who have other missions and functions, but you might say the ground troops, right? the general angel is just a loving, nurturing, yum, love bunny. And they will be there to just give you unconditional love and support regardless. Lots of healing of places in you that may feel some pain or may feel some absence of love and some yearning and some longing for love. The angel can touch those places and help heal those. Now, if you find that you have a place within you where you just long for that unconditional love, long for someone to give you that kind of attention that a parent theoretically, a mother theoretically could do, that unconditional attention of total interest in everything that you do and say and think, even down to the boring little strategies of your day. If you want that kind of thing, recognize that you're probably not in your adult at that time. And so the part of you that needs that, your child part, who's needy for attention and love and validation, your adolescent who's needy for love, attention, and validation, whichever one it is, then what you may want to do, and you can do that in the meditation that is following, is that you can give them, whichever one it is, you can give them their perfect life. Give them all the validation and love and unconditional acceptance that they need. And it will take the longing out of you, whatever longing you may have, whatever emptiness you may yearn to fill. It is filled when you give them that in meditation. It's a fantasy for you, but for them, it is real. You see, your subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between a meditation and the physical plane reality. That's why visualizations can work. They kind of fool the subconscious into thinking certain things have happened when they haven't, and it shifts the whole perception, perspective, and program dynamics of the subconscious, and you can change. You can heal and change and grow. So you may want to do it anyway for your adolescent self, the part of you that's like, let's say, about 15 or 16, and give her the ideal mother. Give her the ideal love life. Give her the ideal acceptance at school and peer approval. Give her her ideal life. Make her beautiful. If she has a feature that she doesn't like, just fix her up. Give her her perfect life and send her on her way. And do the same for your child. Give that unconditional 24/7 mother who will just, so that your child self can go and crawl on her lap and just be held and just live there. In this bliss. You see?
Yes.
All right. So when you do that, it will satisfy something in you. It will scratch that itch. And then you don't look to your mother anymore. You can let her go and she can be free to go on. And because right now she can't really make it through to you because she's not able to provide you that type of thing. That's not the spirit she is. So it's kind of like it's been nagging at her. And it's been nagging at you too. So once you let this go, you'll feel a great deal of peace in that department of your life. Do you understand?
I do.
All right.
It's beautiful.
And that will open up a beautiful space for you to have more love in your friendships and in the various people that you know in your outer life and in your physical plane existence. You can feel much more comfortable, and your love for yourself can be more radiant, and that can attract to you more love. So it's a win-win all around the place. All right. Thank you for that question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Anyone else?
Galexis.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much for today, for the information or energy coming in and this information.
You're welcome.
It seems so important and crucial for not only our own personal healing and change, but also maybe for global healing.
Yes.
And global change as well. So as I hear you speak and you talk about relationships, it seems to me that the resonance that is of relationship is more important than the fact of being in a relationship. Because in the resonance of relationship, in the field of energy, you can add energy or take away energy.
Yes.
And then change the relationship you're in.
Yes.
It's harder to do it the other way around, I suspect.
Well, it's a lot easier to learn swimming in water than on dry land. So it's a lot easier to learn about relationships when you're in one.
Yes.
However, that you have this access to the energies and the vibrations and the knowings, you can work a lot with your own subconscious so that your relationship with yourself is cleaned up.
Yes.
Yes, that's essentially what you're saying there. And as your relationship with yourself is cleaned up, then everything, as we say, it's this reality is being light and mirrors. Everything that reflects you, all the stuff that comes to you on your mirrors is a lot more fun.
It reflects you as the magician.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that maybe needs to be subtracted, one of the energies, as you've talked about this, and we've spoken about this earlier with the channel and Daniel, shame that people carry, male shame, doing,
mm-hmm. Yes,
and female shame, being, the beingness.
Yes.
It seems that, you know, that's really huge in our culture, and
it
seems like it's really surfacing now for a lot of people. And when I get in touch with the shame, the male shame, it's so powerful to be in touch with that. It just, you know, wants to bring me to my knees.
Yes.
And then you realize that, well, the temptation is that, well, I'll do something about it. That's not, of course, the answer. The problem is in not doing enough, feeling as though you're not enough or not doing enough. Perhaps female shame not being enough is related there. But the comments that I would like for you to make is, as I observe this in myself and in other people, it seems that what is surfacing in people's bodies are digestive problems. The closer the shame gets to the surface, then the more digestive problem seems to appear within our bodies, and, you know, mine and others. So I've noticed that.
Yes, a very good observation, yes. Well, the digestive system is the place where you take in your information. You take in your food and you digest it. It becomes part of you. When you were a child, the whole concept about shame, the failure, the humiliation, and the worthlessness, valuelessness, inability to be loved, or the non-lovability-ness of yourself, all of these factors that came in as a child were pretty overwhelming, pretty dark, pretty overwhelming, and the child can't do anything about it. So it has to take it in. It has no choice, really. It doesn't know how to reject it. There are a lot of children who have digestive problems. It's very well known that a lot of times as they're trying to teach children how to eat at the very beginning of their lives, or they have difficulties with their food and digesting their food. But eventually one separates it out and just puts the overload, buries it deeper into the body. The first line of defense against anything is the digestive system. That's where, because this is the digestive tract from the mouth to the rectum is technically outside the body, which you know, but a lot of people are not aware of it. They think it's inside. No, it has to be taken through the intestinal walls or through the walls of this channel into the body to be absorbed into the body. And a lot of allergies are related to not being able to handle food because of old rage, shame, pain, humiliation, rejection, loneliness, failure, and just essential sense of self-hatred or judgment of self, and so forth. So in a culture that's toxic emotionally and now becoming physically toxic, yes, it's going to show up more in the physical body. And as it comes to the surface, as it comes from the deeper layers to the shallow layer, the last layer very often that it will show up in, if a person is actually in a cleansing or purification process, will be the digestive system. If the person is not doing a releasing, healing, personal development process, what will happen is that it just keeps getting buried deeper and deeper and keeps getting covered with more layers of shame, bound with layers of anger, fear, rage, powerlessness, etc., etc., and it just gets layered and layered and it becomes cancer. Or it can go into organs and create tension and hold them in so much tension that you've got high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and because there's a need to fight or a need to defend, and so that an aggression that goes into the circulatory, into the heart, and then there is then another reaction to the shame, which is very common in your culture. It has to do with the sugar regulation of the body. And that is, if I am loved, my life is sweet. If I'm not loved, I'm really, really pissy angry. I'm really angry. But if I really let my anger out, I'll be rejected and nobody will like me, so I have to cover it. I have to cover this angry self. That's low blood sugar. High blood sugar, I've got to take care of everybody else so they will think I'm sweet and they will look up to me and they'll be nice to me and I will get love. And so people will play on the sugar dynamic to get a sweetness, to get the love in their life. And some people just don't think they have sweetness in their life because they're just filled with too much anger. This goes, of course, into the body chemistry, upsets the body chemistry. The digestive system is the one that has to manage and detox all the stuff that's there. So a lot of stuff ends up in the liver. Toxifications come into the liver. Emotional is just as strong as physical. And so the digestive system is the one that's responsible for releasing and allowing it to go. Shame as a person, the shame of being, is generally anchored into the second chakra. The shame of self-image, which men have, the shame, performance anxiety of men, that they've got to perform, that they've got to look good, and they've got to be right, and they, you know, like her father was. You know, there's a sense of, I've got to hold this image. You see, that too, that's a compensation for shame, and that holds the body into tension. And that's got to be released too. And a lot of people are too scared to let their shame go. They're too scared to tune into it. But when you do, it starts coming out, and it will delayer from the heaviness, from the heavy disease state. It will unlayer itself. It will move into lighter and lighter states. And at the end, it will be in the digestive system. So a lot of people who are moving in this new reality, who are at the leading edge of it and are continuously expanding and lifting their frequencies, will encounter a lot more stuff going on in their digestive tract, because that's the place of what do I accept and bring into and claim as my own, and what do I not accept, but I release it and let it go without judgment. Because it's the resistance and the judgment stuck in there that holds these things in place, holds these dark energies in place. So one of the things to do for people with digestive issues is to look at all the most difficult aspects of their shame, to look at the past when they really didn't think they were worth a pile of beans, to look at that phase of their life when they were afraid that anything they would do could fail, and people would see them and judge them and see them as inadequate and reject them and push them away, and they would be banned or they would be excommunicated. And people need belonging. That's a culture plays a lot of control around the energies of belonging, that either you're part of us or you're our enemy, an old tribal concept. So you're either with us or against us. And so a lot of people afraid of being labeled against and therefore rejected will push that shame down deep inside, will not let their anger and their it's natural to be angry if you are being shamed by someone, but it will be pushed down into guilt and held in there, and judgment will follow and anchor it in. So judgment must come out. So anytime you have a digestive problem, go to where the judgments are. Where did you make judgments about yourself in the past? Go there. What did you judge yourself about? What image were you holding of yourself that you were judging yourself for? And that's the nauseating image. You were holding that image of yourself as this unworthy, useless, unlovable pile of crap, you see. And you go there and you just be present with it. As you are present with it, breathe it out. You can start letting your body get the message, it's time to release this stuff. Can bring it up into the digestive to release it. Now, a lot of people who are sensitive to environmental things, they are in that phase of releasing from the digestive system. So it's probably a good sign to a certain extent that it's the digestive system, because that is, as the first line of defense, it's the last line of holding on. So in a sense, if you get it to there from some place deeper and more ugly, you've made a really good progress, you see. So it can be a good sign in that regard. But there's also one more factor, And that those of you who are on the leading edge, who are coming, and specifically all of you in this room are aware of that, all of you listening are that, you're aware that you are also bringing a change onto the planet, and that as you change, your culture changes, your reality changes. It's a tremendously empowering place to be, that when you change yourself, everything around you will change, because when you change yourself, what is reflected back to you? The greater light that you are. So everything changes. The illusion changes. And as you become more and more capable in the illusion, and then you realize this whole thing of shame was just a sham. It was just a strategy. It was just a game. There's nothing real about it at all. It has nothing to do with who you are. It's nothing to do with that. It's just a strategy. It was a strategy that was used, that you had to learn, that was used on you to control you. And indeed, the greatest opening of spirituality that's going to heal the planet, probably at the greatest foundational level, is as you and as individuals heal your shame and no longer view yourself as being anything less than divine, anything less than light, anything less than powerful, and really start owning up to who you really are. And then it starts to get a lot more fun. But until you really get to that fun place, what happens is there is this intermediate place as a light being that as you're clearing out your own shame, you start taking on the shame of the planet. You start taking on the shame of your culture. That is when it gets really overwhelming to your body. That's when you have so much environmental stress. That's when things can overload you. That's when you can overreact and your body can overreact to things. That's when you tune into the shame and it is absolutely so nauseating you think you're going to puke and you don't know if you're ever going to recover from it. That's when you get to that awareness of how your body is rejecting it and how difficult that can be for your body to handle the overwhelming toxic overload of shame that's in your culture. But being that you are magical beings, divine beings, your mission for yourself is to overcome this. And then perhaps one of your greatest gifts to your planet, to this transformation of consciousness, is to visualize and imagine and dream what would it be like to have relationships free of shame. And we're going to delineate in a little while, before the end of this workshop, of course, about the details of that. What does a shame-free relationship look like, feel like? How does it function? And some of you already know, and you're very fortunate to have discovered it. Some of you are partly there. Some of you just need a little ooch of imagination and so forth. But the most important thing is that you're willing to look at it, and you're willing to, in the meantime, lift it off yourself. Just don't take the whole reality. Don't take your culture, because your perception is that that's very real because it's out there. It's all your stuff. It's reflecting. So the shame and pain of your culture is a reflection of you building it up and making it something really, really huge, and it can crush you. There's some spiritually leading edge individuals that have horrendous health problems. And there's two reasons for them. One is that they're taking on too much stuff. They're taking on the world stuff. And when they take on the world stuff, it's like they don't realize that if they just clean up their own stuff, it starts healing the world stuff. They think they've got to take on this master load. That's one thing. And the second reason that so many leading edge people have health issues is also that if they didn't have health issues, if they felt really good, the level of consciousness that they are at, they could really party better than anybody else. They really could get into being worldly. They could really get into doing their thing. Many of you have had wonderful lifetimes teaching some interesting, intriguing topic or doing adventures in the wilderness, discovering lost temples, you know, the whole Indiana Jones stuff. You've had lifetimes doing this kind of thing, or imprints of it, so that you could enjoy and run the movies. But the thing is that if you come for the change of consciousness, which is the grandest movie of all, healing your own shame is going to be pivotal. It's going to be key for this, because as your relationships reflect back to you more of the divine love of yourself, this has a ricochet effect in the grid of light that is your illusion into your culture. You will become so less sensitive when you get through this passageway to toxins in your environment. They'll be nothing to you. You know, there are these people who seem to be so undeveloped, and it seems that, hey, the reality, hey, they don't notice all these toxins. They're doing just fine. They're walking around, seem to be totally healthy. What toxins? You just some kind of wimp, you know, to be suffering from all these toxins. What toxins? You know, I'm not going to listen to you. These aren't toxins. I'm going to continue to use my fabric softeners, and I'm going to put in 4 sheets a load, because I want my clothes to really smell good. Yeah, whatever. So they're going to really do that, and it's not going to appear to affect them. And you wonder, how is that working? It's because the reality that they are in, because of their adjustment to their shame, that they are actually have created so much repression of their shame in their body and stashed it down so deep that they are in alignment with their culture. If you're a spiritual leading edge person, are you in alignment with the mainstream culture? No, not at all. But if you're in alignment with it, if you love pop culture, you know, you just got to go to every basketball game, every football game that your local team does, and you just got to go and have your beer, and you got to go and do this and go to do those little the quilting bee because all your friends are doing the quilts, whatever it is, the little worldly things that are just there for you. If that just fits, if you could just enjoy your life and just have friends over and have nice meals and do a little bit of decorating in the house and your life is all hunky dory, you're in alignment with the mainstream culture. It's not going to harm you overtly. It's not going to be obvious. But if you're in a spiritual developmental leading edge, pushing the limits, you realize that the mainstream culture just doesn't give you what you're looking for. You've got to have more, because you are more. And if you can stop judging the mainstream culture, you'll find you get along better with it, even if you're not in alignment with it. Because if you judge it and resist it and rebel against it, which all of you had to do initially at the beginning to establish some kind of distinction between you and it, if you continue that, that gets toxic. Any judgment gets toxic. It's like you're shaming society. Shame on you for continuing to use, what, 4 fabric softener sheets per laundry load. You know, you should know better than that, blah, 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 blah. So let off. Back off. There's nothing to judge. It's all mirrors. It's all smoke and mirrors. Nothing to judge. Let yourself accept that's the culture without judgment. But continue to stretch your light, continue to clear your shame, and don't take the culture on. You are not strong enough to carry what you think is the load of shame and pain that this culture has. You cannot do it. It will kill you. You see, so what you've brought up is a key to healing. Relationships are the place where you see the application of shame. In action, the application of shame in its various mirrors, in its various venues, and the ways it works, and the ways, ins and outs, and the pathways of it, how they function. relationships are your fastest way to grow, your fastest and most immediate mirrors to you. Those of you who've had parents, you know that your child will always reflect immediately right back to you as they're growing up. It's amazing. They'll reflection right back. Oh, my gosh, right back at you. Great learning process, parenthood. But any relationship, tremendous learning possibilities. So that's why we're looking at it and focusing on it today in terms of that. So thank you for your request.
Well, yes, indeed, and thank you. What a beautiful recipe for changing the template or changing a paradigm to a new way to be, a new way to live, a new way to enjoy.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for asking that. All right, so what we're going to do here is we're going to take another break. And this is also a shorter one. And when you come back, we're going to do a meditation. We're going to do some healing. We're going to do some really nice, deep, emotional healing, healing some wounds of old relationship patterns or present relationships, whatever you would like to heal. But choose just one person you would like to complete with. You would like to use this pattern, this healing relationship for. Now, admittedly, the technique can be used again and again. You can get the CDs of this event and you can listen to it again as many times as you choose and do it for as many people as you choose. Don't do it for more than one at a time, but do it for one and see what happens. But choose somebody that it would be good for you. You think from your past, generally, you know, you could do a parent. They're always very good for this. And, or some ex-spouse, really good for this. Or some family member that just continuously still tries to push your buttons, still has some unfinished stuff. Use it for something that can be pivotal for you. And you will have the template. You will know how to shift and move the energies and very specifically. So after that, it can be much easier and you can do it on your own. All right. So just a few minutes so that you can get yourself all prepared and come back and everyone will gather, you and all spirits, all your guardian angels, everybody going to come in for a nice healing. All right. So farewell for now.